Hello, everybody, and thanks for listening. It's Maria Boynton. Today, my guest is Shanti Das. We know you as a longtime music executive, but now you've taken on a cause, Silence the Shame, the movement in itself. Why don't you tell everybody what the Silence the Shame movement is, Shanti?
First of all, Maria, thank you for having me on. I do have a new cause now. The movement is under my Hip Hop Professional Foundation. We focus on mental health, youth empowerment, and poverty. But the Silence the Shame movement has really taken off. I think we owe a lot to social media. So many people have started following us. We have almost 10,000 followers on our page. But more importantly, we're out in the community doing the work. We started Silence the Shame to peel back the layers of shame and stigma around mental health so we could normalize the conversation. And we have so many people that come out to our panel discussions, that listen to our podcast, that's on iTunes. And what I'm finding is that so many people are out there suffering, or they have family members or friends or coworkers suffering, and they really don't know how to encourage them to either continue getting the treatment that they need or to initially seek help.
Again, everyone, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Shanti Das. She is the founder of the Silence the Shame movement. The reason we're here today, of course, Shanti, you joined with Intercom Radio here in Atlanta to highlight and normalize the conversation surrounding the issue of mental health. When we talk about mental health, what are we talking about here, Shanti?
So we all have mental health. Yes. We may not all have a mental illness, but you're talking about just the unique ability to wake up every day and to lead our normal lives and to be able to think properly and think clearly. I think we live in a society and a culture where there's so many stressors out there for us now, whether it's socioeconomic or political, financial. And so it's really tough for a lot of people to understand how to channel their emotions, their thoughts, and their feelings. And what we're trying to do is to help people, again, normalize the conversation, but to understand that there are healthy coping mechanisms, because, you know, I think you and I shared offline that, you know, we've had family members that may have had more severe mental illnesses. But what I want everyone to know, and your listeners, Maria, is that no one, and I mean no one, is immune to this. It could be the loss of a loved one, of a child. It could be a kid going through a divorce with their parents. That can be very traumatic. So any kind of traumatic experience could possibly send someone into, you know, a clinical depression if you don't learn how to deal with those thoughts and feelings and frustrations over time, if you don't seek counseling from a therapist. And not everyone may need medication, but I do believe in therapy, talk therapy. Sometimes we just have to have that objective person in our lives to help us process our thoughts.
Why did Shanti Das decide to start the Silence the Shame movement? What was your reasoning?
So my reasoning was my father took his own life when I was 7 months old. Growing up in the African-American community is something that we're very hush-hush about. I was embarrassed, Maria, to tell people how my dad had died. I would just say, oh, he died. But I didn't want to tell anyone that he killed himself because I thought people would think less of me because of that. And so for many years, my mom and I didn't really talk about it. I didn't even want my mom to bring his name up, although she said, oh, your dad loved you. He was sick. I still didn't really understand what that was, and I didn't understand suicide. And so as I got older, I started to really try to peel back those layers and understand what it meant for someone to take their own life. And so I think as I got successful, and as successful as I was in the entertainment industry, that still doesn't, you know, mask all of your problems, right? And we're still human beings. And so aside from all the glitz and glamour and highlights and red carpets, I found myself dealing with my dad's suicide as an adult. Also, 4 years ago, my best friend took her own life. And so there was a lot of guilt and self-blame there because I was one of the last people to talk to her the weekend before it happened. And so I kept rehashing and going back through my thoughts, trying to figure out what I had done wrong. And there was always this looming over my head that because my dad did it, is this something that I might do one day? So in 2015, I came really close to taking some pills. Maria, I thought my work was done here. Between my best friend's suicide, my own personal issues of stress and not being able to cope properly, it just kind of sent me into a downward spiral. And it was actually in September of 2016. So here we are 3 years later, by the grace of God, God placed this movement in my lap. And I said, I have to turn my pain into something that's more powerful to help other people. And I just, you know, I said, you know, I'm not going to be embarrassed anymore. I'm not going to be afraid to talk about it. And sure enough, once I started opening up, it was very empowering for me. And I think the vulnerability allows me to be able to touch so many lives. And so for that, I'm grateful.
Let's go back to when you thought you were going to take some pills. What was the feeling? What do you recall going through your mind? Was it the loss of your dad, the loss of your friend, along with what else?
It was a very dark day for me. I remember crying like uncontrollably. I just, you know, you ever watch something and you cry and then you like snap out of it? Okay, it was the exact opposite for me. I felt like I had watched a sad movie and just continued crying for the rest of the day. And it was interesting because I had all these thoughts coming into my head that I felt like I couldn't control. And I was like, gosh, is this the devil in my head? Like, what is going on? And so I had just said it was okay. I had gone through my medicine cabinet and I was identifying how many pills that I had because I felt like that was the easiest way to do it. I did have thoughts in the back of my head of how this would affect my family. And I did not want to do that to my family again after them having lived through it with my father. And I didn't really want to die, Maria. Well, I didn't want to die. Let me say that. I just wanted the pain to go away. And I didn't know how to stop it. And ended up getting out of the house, running into a friend. And I know that was just God placing that friend in my pathway. And they convinced me to call my sister because they know how close I am to my sister. And she convinced me to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK. So I talked to someone with the Lifeline for about 20 minutes. And I was still crying and going through it. But I was at least trying to deal with the situation because I was still afraid to go back home because I just didn't trust myself. And I also texted my pastor, and my pastor told me that he would pray with me, but that he also wanted me to get help, which is interesting because sometimes in our churches, you know, not everyone in the Christian community understands how to deal with suicide. And I do think you need, you know, to pray and be faithful. But sometimes you need to pray and ask God to allow you to go to the doctor. It's no different than when you are stricken with cancer or diabetes or some other illness. You typically will go to the doctor, get the proper diagnosis, and get whatever help that you need. For some reason, I was just afraid to see a psychiatrist. I didn't want to be in any kind of medication because I didn't want to think I was quote unquote crazy. And now when I look back, so many people, I think, experience this. I'm not crazy. I even, hate that word.
You can say, I'm not crazy. Go.
I'm not crazy. You know, I hate to even utilize that word nowadays. I had just gotten into a situation and I needed help to get out of it.
You're listening to Shanti Doss, the founder of the Silence the Shame movement. It has grown by leaps and by bounds. Of course, you said because of social media. Let's talk about your own personal experience. Shanti, you've been telling us about that very dark day in your life in 2016. You've been telling us about that very dark day. Say 2015, because I think I heard 2016 earlier. Say 2015.
2015.
Okay, good. If you did say 16, I'll put that in there. That very dark day in 2015 where you'd already lost your dad when you were 7 months old, then you lose a very good friend, and you have a very, very dark day to where you say, I'm going to take a handful of pills and I'm going to end it right now. And then you say you know that it was God that came in that day because you went out, saw somebody, you went to the church for help. Let's talk about who was there for you. You went to the church. How was your family in all of this when you were going through your situation?
So I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't tell a lot of my family members. I think that I was afraid, and I knew that if I was going to go ahead and complete it, that I didn't want to talk to them because I knew they would try to stop me. And I just didn't want to bring anybody into the situation. But again, I think it was just a sign from God that allowed me to call my sister because now I realize he wasn't done with me here on earth and there was more work for me to do. And so that's why he gave me the courage and strength to be able to call my sister. But, you know, I didn't share it with my brother, and we've since talked about it, but he was very hurt when he found out about it. And my mother has Alzheimer's. And so the only piece that I found that I thought, well, if it happens, she's not going to really know anyway, and it won't affect her the same way. But yeah, I didn't bring a lot of my families and friends into it. And I think that's why it was so hard for them to process it or understand it or even believe it, so to speak, because I was very secretive about it and I didn't want to tell anyone.
It's an issue of the mind, which in itself is very complicated, very complex. So how would you explain your being able to unravel what was going on and to work your way out to see clearly?
It's like being in a maze almost and not being able to find your way to the end of the maze. And, you know, it, almost like an opening within the maze that gives you this secret doorway that you can enter through. And so it was no real rhyme or reason that night, but I think I just kind of finally surrendered and was like, okay, if I'm not going to take my own life, how do I get help? And those thoughts were kind of going on in my mind. And so once I talked to the person on the Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
And give them that number again.
It's 1-800-273-TALK. You know, they were asking me, you know, are you in a position where you can harm yourself right now? And I said, actually, no, I'm in the car. I'm driving around. And so I think it was a good thing that for whatever reason, God or whoever, you know, I just got out of the house because I knew that if I stayed in my bedroom, which my bathroom is attached, that I might have taken those pills. And I'm just very grateful that I did not.
What do you see? And I know that you've talked to a lot of health professionals in finding the Silence the Shame movement through the years. What are we finding are some of the issues that can, I guess we can say, take people over into the realm of those dark days and saying, I can't do this anymore? What can be some of the factors that push them over the edge, I guess?
Yeah, some of the triggers, I think, and symptoms can be the loss of a job, the loss of a spouse. Even sometimes, you know, we have these mass shootings. So having a child or a friend get killed in one of those mass shootings, it could be a relationship. We oftentimes talk about it in the mental health community that we see a lot of suicides happen as a result of, you know, breakups with relationships. Or you know how you hear about murder suicides. So that's very common. Even in Silicon Valley, there was a story that CNN published a couple of years ago called The Secret in Silicon Valley. And so we found that a lot of these high-powered, high-profile executives couldn't cope with the stress of being in that world. And so there was a gentleman who worked at eBay that literally, he was like, you know, on the senior level, and he had a wife and two kids. He just jumped in front of a moving train. And of course, he died immediately. But you find people, even, you know, when you think back and you think about some of the Ivy League institutions, some of the college kids, you know, have chosen suicide in the past because they couldn't handle the workload and the pressure. You know, again, it's one thing to, you know, be great on your job and to do good, but everybody doesn't know how to channel that stress and those emotions. And so if it isn't the loss of a loved one or a relationship, it could just be that everyday stress that builds up and people don't know how to properly manage some of that stress that can kind of take them over the edge, if you will. So that's why we also like to teach people about having healthy coping mechanisms, right? And a daily self-care regimen, which, you know, working out for me has done amazing things in terms of my overall mental psyche and helping me feel good about myself. It's been proven scientifically that when you start working out, you get those endorphins going and it automatically puts you in a better mood. You know, I know some of my triggers now. Even sometimes it's hard for me to be around certain events in the entertainment industry because, you know, I walked away at the height of my career. My mom had developed Alzheimer's. I wasn't really happy in the place that I was in. No fault of my boss or anybody. I just wasn't really happy anymore. And it was just so much going on. And so that's why I encourage therapy, you know, for so many people. People think, oh, well, nothing's wrong with me. I don't need a therapist. Well, you know what? Sometimes you might need a therapist, even if nothing is wrong, just to make sure that you continue to have those good days. And so if something does arise, that you know how to handle it properly. I long for the day where, you know, people talk openly. And more people are doing it, where, like, you go to the grocery store, you got to stop by the cleaners. Oh, let me run to the bank. Oh, yeah, I got to go see my therapist. So it's a part of your, you know, daily routine if you need it. And a lot of people also, especially in our community, will say, well, how do I find a good therapist? So I don't have the money. And you just have to do your research and homework like anything else. Sometimes, you know, it may not be that easy finding it, but there's a wonderful website out there called Therapy for Black Girls. that has a great database. Obviously, going off referrals are a good thing. You know, getting into those chat rooms on social media online or asking people on social media for recommendations. You know, NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, has local chapters throughout the country, as well as Mental Health America of Georgia. Georgia also has, it's called GCAL. If you Google that, they have their own crisis number. The resources are out there. We just have to do the homework. And I tell people, you know, sometimes you may need to see two or three therapists until you find the right fit for yourself. Because I hate when I hear people that say, oh, I tried therapy, but I don't like my therapist, so I never went again. Well, we can't say that about our doctors. If you don't like your doctor, you're going to go, and I mean primary care physician, you're going to go and find the right one, or even a dentist, right? I've been to several dentists until you find the right fit for you. It's no different with that. And we have to start looking at mental health like physical health. It really should be no difference. It's mind, body, and soul.
Everyone, thank you for listening. You're hearing Shanti Doss, who is the founder of the Silence the Shame Movement. She has joined with Intercom Atlanta here to find a way to normalize the conversation around mental health. And in our community, it's something we just don't want to talk about. But as you and I, we talked, and we know someone in our family, they have mental health issues. Now, some of them brought on by stress, as we've talked about, but then what about those that are there? They've been there ever since you've known your aunt, you've known your uncle, you've known that family member, and something has been different since you've known them. How are the two different that you found?
Well, of course, you know, some of the more severe issues are unique cases. I had a family member that suffered from schizophrenia, and he had it as long as, you know, like you said, as long as I have known him or knew him, rather. He's since passed away. So sometimes, you know, people are already predisposed to some of those chemical imbalances. And so our loved ones may need to be hospitalized. They may need to be on medication for the rest of their lives. You know, I've interviewed young men who suffer from bipolar 1 disorder. And this one young man said, I know I need my medication to survive on a daily basis. And oftentimes, a lot of people that have the more severe disorders, they do not like how the medication makes them feel. And so it's a thing of where you have to stay in close contact with your psychiatrist and your primary care physician and make sure that it aligns with any other medication that you may be on, that the dosage is right for you. I do hope that a lot of our big pharmas, if you will, the pharmaceutical companies, can continue to research and come up with better medication for some of the more severe disorders. I know now that there's a shot that you can receive if you suffer from schizophrenia. And so sometimes that's easier on people than having to take pills. And it's a little bit more consistent for them. So they're continuously making strides. But I think, you know, we need to talk to our senators, our congresspeople, to make sure that the laws are in our favor from a mental health standpoint, that they're not cutting areas of funding around mental health. Because, you know, over the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of that funding be placed back on the onus of the state, as opposed to from a federal perspective. And so, you know, there are no like state mental institutions, if you will, that we heard of like when we were growing up, right? So a lot of the hospitals, just a regular hospital, may have 5 or 6 beds devoted for mental health, but then you have to go to more specialty facilities for inpatient or a long-term care. And it's a lot that needs to happen. A lot of laws need to change. And, you know, we need to make sure we continue fighting for people that do have the more serious disorders and that can get the help that they need. Because what's really difficult is if you do have a serious mental disorder, you know, once you pass 21, your family member or loved one, they can't make you get treatment. And so then you end up, that is the family member that stays in the back of that house, locked away in the room where you just give them dinner, you know, and you say, oh, that's just them. They're crazy. Well, no, we can't. That's no way that your loved one should live, right? And so as much as we can educate ourselves and get informed like anything else, I think we can hopefully see a better future as it relates to mental health care, suicide prevention and awareness, and mental health overall.
You talk about, and we're listening, we're talking to Shanti Doss here, everyone. You talk about the family members, the support system, being better informed, being educated. What else can they do? Because their health is an issue as well. What should they do along with getting educated and being able to be there? How can they be the caregiver making sure that their family member gets the help that they need, but at the same time, also focusing on their own well-being.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Maria. Thank you for making that statement and asking that question. Caregivers is the operative word. And so you find a lot of organizations like NAMI, as I mentioned earlier, Mental Health Care of America, and there's a specific one in Georgia, their chapter. They do a lot of sometimes seminars and programs for the caregivers, because that is a job in and of itself, because you really need to understand what the medical condition is, because it is a sickness. People tend to like write off mental health and disorders as if it's not a real medical condition, and it absolutely is. It's a disease, you know, many diseases rather within that spectrum. And so they have to learn how to not be judgmental with the family members, how to handle them if the situation escalates, because there are some situations where some people are so sick that they end up having what's called a psychotic break. And it can be very scary for the family. So there are codes like a 1013. If you have to call 911, you want to make sure you know the proper codes that you tell the police. What that does is that alerts the operator on the end of the phone to know that we don't need you to just send the cops to this house thinking that someone is in danger. We need them to know that there's a person here that suffers from a severe mental illness, and you need to handle it with care. So police officers are actually trained. They're called CIT trained officers, and they come to the home to know how to properly take care of that loved one and get them to the hospital. I have a family member that suffers from bipolar disorder. What I ended up doing is when they were in a treatment facility, I went to one of the support groups for the families. One, it gives me an opportunity to have one-on-one contact with other families that are going through the same things. So that exchange of information between the family members, Maria, is invaluable, right? Because it's someone else that shares your story and that can help you, right? And so we can encourage each other as a community. The other thing that I think is important is, you know how you can get CPR training?
Yes.
So there's a thing called mental health first aid training. It's like an 8-hour course. I know Mental Health Care America of Georgia offers it and other organizations. That's one of the things that Silence of Shame is going to start offering, free mental health first aid trainings for the community. We're very excited about that. And it at least just gives you that initial information that if you are faced with it yourself or have a family member or friend, that you know how to handle it. So again, it's resources out there for the caregivers, but I can't stress this enough.
I can't stress this enough. You good?
Yeah. I can't stress this enough. Family members, friends, if you have someone that's suffering, do yourself a favor to go to one of those mental health first aid trainings or find a support group for caregivers so that you can learn how to deal with it. Again, if it's really a serious mental health disorder, 9 times out of 10, that family member may have to deal with that for the rest of their lives, right? Something different than maybe, you know, minor anxiety or depression that you can clear up over time with medication. Sometimes these chemical imbalances or the diseases for family members may be something that they have to do for the rest of their lives. And yes, you as that caregiver will have to learn how to deal with it and how to handle your own mental health in the process of that, right? And so that's why I think seeing a therapist, even if you have someone else that's suffering, will help you out and allow you to still, you know, lead a productive life for yourself.
Sanity became a priority for Shanti Das. That's my guest today. We're talking about the Silence the Shame. Silence the Shame, the movement, which she started a few years ago. You had it all. You were a music executive, and then one day you decided, I need to do something more. Sanity became a priority. You lost your father when you were 7 months old to suicide. You lost a friend. You had your own personal experiences as well. I am sitting here now holding the book, Silencing My Shame by Shanti Das. Looks like it's a nice read here. It's not a big book. It says, a story of how I turned my pain into passion and started a movement. Dr. Grayson Norquist, who is professor and vice chair of the Emory Department of Psychology and Behavioral Sciences, he's the chief with Grady Behavioral Health Service. He calls this book by Shanti Das a moving story. A music executive who appeared to have it all, but after facing emotional struggles, learned to heal herself and ignite a global movement to help others. We're talking about the Silence the Shame movement. Where do you want to take this movement? How far do you want it to go? What's your goal?
My goal, Maria, is to take it around the world. I'm excited that I'm speaking in Amsterdam at a dance music conference next month. I thought they wanted me to come over and talk about my career in entertainment. Well, come to find out, they have been following the Silence of Shame movement. They want me to come over and talk about music and mental health and how to help musicians know how to cope and deal with stress working in this industry. You know, we hope to continue to put together amazing programs within the churches. We have May 5th is actually, which is, you know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Right. And so May 5th is now National Silence to Shame Day. So we have a recognized day. And then that Sunday, we do Silence to Shame Sunday. So I want to do Silence to Shame Sundays at churches all around the country. And I want to be able to take this to places like Africa and to the Caribbean. I know they have very different opinions on mental health, but we want to try to get the people help that they need so they can understand help is out there. We want to be able to have wellness retreats and, you know, bring in speakers and, again, just make this a part of everyday culture and pop culture so that people are cool with it. They're okay with it. We see so many of our celebrities. I mean, if we look at the recent tragic deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, and just recently the accidental or apparent drug overdose of the rapper Mac Miller, it's a lot of people out there hurting. Demi Lovato, who just relapsed about a month ago from her issue of substance abuse. And this is a conversation for another day, Maria, but we also want to start making sure that substance abuse is a part of the conversation when you're talking about mental health, because there are statistics out there that show that so many people that suffer from substance abuse is as a result of a mental health concern, something they're not properly dealing with, and they're using that substance as a way to cope. And so we want to change the conversation around substance abuse so that we can get people the help that they need as well.
She's an advocate, a warrior in her own battle with depression and anxiety. We're talking to Shanti Doss, who found herself in a position where sanity, as we said, became her first priority. You do a lot. You're traveling now. You're getting the message out there about the importance of normalizing the conversation surrounding mental health. What else do you have going on? I understand you have a podcast, too. How do people find that?
So our podcast, the Silence of Shame podcast, is available on iTunes as well as SoundCloud and Google Play. We have really great podcasts up already where we interviewed Michelle Williams, former member of Destiny's Child. We interviewed Seven Shrita, the recording artist and actress Tashina Arnold. Also other licensed healthcare professionals. We're about to interview some veterans so we can talk about, you know, what they've been dealing with from a PTSD standpoint and the trauma that exists. We're going to support the LGBTQ community and do conversations around that. We also do panel discussions all around the country. So if you have an organization or group that want us to come in and do kind of a mental health wellness one-on-one panel discussion with your group, we can do that. We were very grateful. We're coming off the heels of a 7-city teen mental health tour with Jack and Jill of America Incorporated. So we're talking to teens all around the country. We've done work with the Boys and Girls Club. I've spoken at the NBA. I just did a lunch and learn at Georgia Power. So now I'm actually starting to go into corporations and talk to their staff just about mental health and dealing with stress, you know, in the workplace. And so we have so many goals and different things that we want to do. We're very excited about the support that we've been given and the national platforms. You know, just earlier this year, the NFLPA, the National Football League Players Association, did a mental health conference, and I was able to host that. And so working with some of these other sports organizations, because we see a lot of athletes that are starting to open up and share. We want to take this thing. I want the Oprah effect. I want the Michelle Obamas of the world, the Ellens of the world to know what we're doing to silence the shame so that we can take this movement to pop culture and around the world so that we can heal.
How do people find you? How do they get in touch with you?
So you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at ShantiDoss404. But more importantly, we'd love you to join the movement so you can follow us at Silence the Shame on Instagram. On Twitter and Facebook, it's at SilenceTHShame. Or visit our website for the foundation, which is www.hhp.org. ATF.co. And if, you know, if you feel so moved by the work that we're doing, you know, we do accept donations because we're not yet a fully funded organization. But Maria, we're out here doing the work. I invested a lot of my own personal funds into making this movement work because I do believe that this was an assignment from God and I have to follow out this ministry. So this is my ministry. And if you want a copy of my book, which is Silencing My Shame, you can visit the website www.shantidas.live.
And of course, she spells her name S-H-A-N-T-I, Doss, D-A-S. She is a warrior. She is an advocate. We're talking about Shanti Doss, who has taken on a mission to debunk, dispel, and mute the stigmas on mental health. We could go on, and we're going to have you back too, Shanti, okay? And what, let's see.
I just want to have a final.
Okay.
Thing I want to say.
Give me something to lead you into.
So what are your final words for suicide
okay.
prevention?
So, Shanti, when it comes to suicide prevention awareness, what final words do you have?
It's really simple, Maria. Take time, save a life, and silence the shame.
Shanti Doss, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Boynton reporting.
Let's see.
Thank you for listening. I'm Maria Boynton.